This is the Punk and Piledrivers podcast with your host, Big Bad Boris.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Punk and Piledrivers podcast on the Love Wrestling Podcast Network. My name is Big Bad Boris, and this week I am joined by not just a man, not just an athlete, not just a champion, but a legend in the industry, PWA Hall of Famer, multiple-time PWA champion, Dirty Duke Durango. Are you a multiple-time PWA champion?
No, one time.
Oh, really? See, this is what happens when I don't do my research and I don't know my shit.
Well, but to pump my... Well, I mean, to help you out, though, I mean, I was, I bet, tag team champion like no less than 7 or 8 times.
Can you name all of your tag team championship partners?
Oh, man. There's me and Crazy Dean, me and Pistol Pollock, Apocalypse, Ty.
Chris Steele.
Yeah. Sorry.
Was Ravenous Randy in there at all? That whole
just
damage?
Say, I mean, we had a... Yeah, then that Damage Inc. thing, you know, I don't want to say no for sure because I know he was in there. You know, a lot of people don't know that I was the one that got guys like Randy Myers at PWA. Not to, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, because I saw something in him and said, "Hey, Kurt, you got to start using this kid."
Maybe I'll have to go on to the old cage match one day, and I'll get the information.
Sure.
Did you ever go on cage match? It's actually pretty thorough. Like even I'm on there a couple of times.
Is that right? Yeah,
for my couple of matches.
Not really. You know, I that's something like, I mean, somebody told me, well, it's like, I feel weird sometimes talking about this stuff, but it's just the truth. Right. But I saw somebody posted, I want to say Rooster or a guy called Roy, posted that I held the British Commonwealth mid heavyweight title for the most total number of days, you know? And so something like that is like, oh, that's kind of cool. But at the same time, like somebody had to tell me that. I had no idea.
Yeah. So how the hell are you? What's new? What's going on?
Not a lot, man. You know, just working away, living large, getting ready to go to Europe in a bit here for my 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, and yeah, man. Awesome. Where are you guys going?
Pretty good. We're going to Amsterdam. We're going to see Metallica in Paris, and we're going to check out Rome. We got a good thing going on. Yeah, we booked our trip, and then they released a bunch of tour dates. So I jumped online to see if they were playing. And sure enough, they were in Paris while we were kind of going to be around. So we thought, well, we'll schedule going to this concert. And yeah, man, woke up at like 2:45 in the morning because of the time difference. So I could try and buy tickets.
Is it like a big stadium kind of thing or something?
Yeah, 80,000 seats.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Big Those are always stadium. Fun, though. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're playing it around. I mean, we're probably sitting, my assumption is we're sitting way up high because they were, you know, pre-sales from the band, whatever. So. Yeah.
All right. Now, the reason that I've asked you here is I have a couple of three kind of, I don't want to say philosophical things, but just I want to get your take on a couple of things that have been on my mind lately.
Okay.
And what I want to start with was recently at the last AEW pay-per-view, you might have heard about this or seen the clip. MJF took a glass of water or a drink. I think it might have even been an alcoholic drink. And poured it on a kid. And I haven't seen the full match. I've only seen the clip out of context, but I don't think it really matters in this case. But I went on Twitter and I tweeted out that I don't think that wrestlers should ever touch fans. No knocking hats off, no ripping signs. I mean, that's, if you need to do that, then you know, maybe you're not good enough at getting heat. And I got quite a few responses of this, of different people agreeing with me and disagreeing with me. You are obviously kind of like the old school kind of guy. So I wanted to get your take on this.
Well, I don't disagree with you for starters. And I just want to start with that. I think that this, first and foremost, this is a show. It is meant to elicit emotion for sure, but we all have to control ourselves. And I want to quickly say I have crossed that line myself. So I want to be cautious because I have snapped, you know, when fans are throwing shit at me. I take a lot of, you can say anything you want to me, but when people are throwing stuff at me and that stuff kind of escalates quickly. So I have snatched a fan over things like that. And I'm not proud of it, but that is the truth. But at the same time, that was not, at no point would I ever try and justify that action. At no point would I ever try and condone that. At no point do I ever think anyone should do it. right? Like, it's just, first and foremost, it's crazy lawsuit game.
Fair.
Right. Yeah. Like, you're like, let's just start with that. But God forbid you injure that person over, you know, and I don't know if anybody's ever been hit in the head with a peanut M&M, but it's like getting hit in the head with a rock, right? So it'll piss you off pretty quick. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that doesn't mean you go out and snatch a guy that's certainly not a trained fighter. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really dangerous line to cross. And I think that, you know, to just walk out, snatch a drink and dump it on a fan's head, I think that me personally, I mean, and again, I'm cautious when I say this, right? But I think that's way over the line, quite personally. I think that I don't want to be a snowflake about this, right? But at the same time, you can't go assault the fans. You got to be, you know, and if then there's the other side of me too, is the old school guy that says, if that's what you got to do to get heat, you're dog shit anyways. And I'm not saying MJF is dog shit, but I don't think that's something that's cheap heat to me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really cheap heat.
And I think it kind of works the other way, because you cannot have a fan, you know, during someone's entrance, put their hands on one of the talents. So I believe that the respect and that rule should work both ways.
I couldn't agree. And I can't agree more with that, right? Like, everybody, you know, I mean, one thing about the fans is the business has been so exposed that they get stuck on the part that where the business isn't real, or, you know, it's fixed or fake, or, you know, what they don't understand is wrestlers are method actors. And it's something I think the fans really need to grasp, is that we're not just wrestlers. You're literally a method actor. So Duke Durango is my natural personality turned up to 11. I'm really that guy. I work a little harder to be nice, but if you upset me, I can't be a total asshole to deal with. And that's just the truth. So I think when you're out there and you're working heel and you're at the top of that emotional level, you know, and you're working the crowd up and they're working with you and there's an energy exchange back and forth, that adrenaline's flowing, man. And when someone puts their hands on you, there's no telling what that situation can do, because those fans don't understand, you know, while Duke Durango isn't a real person, that's as close to the real me as you're going to get. And as emotional as you're going to catch me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a dangerous line to cross when people are charged up in that kind of environment.
And I like that you mentioned that you've kind of been in that situation before, because I will admit, when I first, you know, turned heel off of ring announcing and I started a heel managing, I did some stuff like that. And it's because I was, and I'm not making excuses, but I was basically green as grass. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And I didn't have a lot of really good mentoring. So I just did what I thought, you know, what felt right. And there's a couple of things that I did back in the day that I wish I could take back. But tell me, like, give me a couple of stories about maybe like you being overly aggressive to fans or fans being overly aggressive to you. And then I'll share one of my stories where I use restraint.
Oh, well, yeah. And I mean, so one where I can't even remember where we were wrestling, you know, some small town in the arena, and there was no ice on the floor. So I don't know if you've ever been on a arena floor that's just wet. It's as slippery as ice when there's just a thin layer of water on it. And we didn't really have anywhere to walk in and out. It was a bit dodgy, one of those kind of things. So anyways, I work up a little bit of heat with the crowd, and there's a lot of younger kids there, right? Like, I'm talking, you know, 9 to 12 year olds, like young kids. So they're excited, you know, we're whipping them into a frenzy. And as I'm leaving the ring, they crowd around me. There's no security. I can't walk because there's no grip in my boots. And the fans are like spitting and kind of kicking your feet and stuff. And it's just like, I almost hit the ground. Right. So, but these are little kids. So all I can do is literally almost run away to the locker room. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and the other thing that I should mention, and maybe people don't understand this, is I kind of jokingly say that the male ego is a terrible thing to waste. One of the things when you challenge somebody, that, you know, if you challenge one of the big heels and you get in their face, they can't let you punk them.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's now it becomes ego involved. So, and people got to kind of consider that, like, he cannot really, you've put that person in a position that if they want to come back here next week and maintain their heat, so to speak, they cannot back down from you. They cannot. So you as the fan, if you're going to get in that guy's face and really push that, you have to know when to step back from that, because he really can't.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong, I mean, the wrestler has to turn and walk away, But at that point, when the wrestler's, you know, does turn and walk away when things are starting to maybe get a little warm, that's when the fan has to know to back off at that point.
Yeah. Guys spend a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, creating and caring and nurturing these characters and these gimmicks, and something like that can tear it down right away.
Yeah, man. You can also be too nice to the fans, right? Mm. Like, you know, if you're supposed to be this big heel and you're always out there, you know, sitting with the kids and reading books at the playground with them, it doesn't, you know, it's great for those kids that you're willing to give that time back. But, you know, at the same time, when you need those kids to boo you, it doesn't necessarily work in your favor.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about something that happened to me years and years and years and years ago. I think it was when we were running Acadia in Calgary.
Okay, yeah.
And I was the water boy for Team Esteem. And I don't know if you remember this. This was
remember that whole program, yeah.
And the fans kind of, we started to get a thing going where remember that movie, The Water Boy with Adam Sandler?
Yeah,
where he would yell that Gatorade is better and get them all fired up. So the fans started doing that to me, and we kind of had a thing going for a couple months where fans would yell Gatorade at me, and I'd kind of sell it like I was pissed off.
Right.
So I'm
you know, some high quality H2O.
So I'm at ringside in the middle of a match doing the thing, and all of a sudden I feel something really cold and sticky over my head.
Oh,
and
no.
And I can taste and smell, and it's grape. And I'm like, some motherfucker just poured a bottle of Gatorade on my head. And I was pissed off. And I turned around ready to swing. And it was this like super old dude in like a walker. And I almost I caught myself, because nothing like that had ever happened to me before. I'd never been like touched by fans. And I was like pissed about security. And I would I had fist clenched ready to just let him have it. And when I turned around, I was like, oh, I can't do this. And I just went in the back and had a little bit of a hissy fit. But that's something that happened to me. And I'm sure you've got stories like that galore.
Oh, this one's really hilarious, to be honest with you. We were working somewhere and I want to see even north of Edmonton. And we only had enough guys to run. I think like we literally only had four matches worth of guys. If
it's
I remember
like one of those
correctly.
Three matches in a battle royal kind of a shows.
It was four matches and a eight man tag.
Okay. Yeah.
Eight man tag. So my match is the last match and the finish is.
Of course, you know, guys, Duke only works main events. I know.
Oh, you please stop. And during my match, you know, a big schmoz starts, baby, you know, heels come out, baby faces come out, you know, we set up the big tag match. And at the point, literally the timing of all of this happening couldn't have been better, to be fully honest. So at the point, right at the time when somebody's supposed to come out and grab my foot and trip me.
Oh no.
Like literally right at the perfect time.
Yeah.
I feel a tug on my boot and bro, I sell the heck out of it. Oh, right. Like no. full on face bump. Right. And I don't get the reaction I expect from the crowd. Right. They're laughing. Like, you know, it was not the reaction I expect.
Yeah.
And I turn around and it's like an 8-year-old kid.
Oh no.
So, you know, I don't know what to do. So now I feel like I got to save face. So I get out of the ring and this kid he's a memory, right? He's running back to his seat with his family. And I'm screaming like, you put your hands on me again, kid. I will put you through a wall. And then people start yelling at me for the way that I'm talking to this kid. Mm-hmm. And I kind of look at this guy and I'm like, hey, when I turn around, because I don't know who's there, and I turn around and kick him in the mouth, how are you going to feel about the big joke then, bro?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, you got to stay out of the way, because legit, that could have been a spot where I literally don't look, I mule kick somebody out of the ring and kick that kid in the face.
Yeah.
Right. That was at least a funny one. Like, I mean, yeah, I look like a total tool for sure.
Something else happened that night as well at the AEW pay-per-view. Afterwards, they did the press conference, which is like becoming a thing now.
I don't like this.
And I don't really watch them, but I saw clips of this afterwards. And MJF comes to do the press conference and he's screaming and yelling and fucking this and shit and fucking shit.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, and I'm not, by no means am I a fuddy-duddy, and I know the press conference is not the pay-per-view and the rules are different and yada, yada, yada. But it just seemed like a little much to me. I don't know if you saw any clips of this. Like MJF, I think he's good, but I think he I don't know what the words I'm looking for, but I think he kind of takes the easy way out a little bit.
Well, even when I was watching last night, there was, I don't know if you watched this.
I did watch the show. Yeah.
When they were doing that 4-man promo and,
the whole thing.
Don't get me started. Well, I started myself, I guess, but, what's his name?
Which one?
Jungle Boy there.
Okay. Yeah.
He's saying, he blah, blah, blah. And this is all a bunch of bullshit. And right away I was like, man, I appreciate why they use that language, because that's legitimately how most of us talk in real life, right? And I get that. But I've always been taught if you have to walk out and flip the crowd off, swear at the fans, things like that, like, have I crossed the line physically? Absolutely. But I've never actually swore at the fans. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, talk to the longtime fans. I bet I can count on one hand if anybody's ever heard me swear at the crowd.
I can't think of it now that you mention it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't. You shouldn't have to swear at the crowd. If you want to be a heel, you separate yourself by having wit, having a banter, and the moves. You have to cheat as a heel. One of the things I watched today, I literally was watching that 6-man tag last night on AEW. I had no idea who the heel and baby faces were supposed to be. I thought Hangman Page, but and then even in that promo before now, I'm on a soapbox. That 4-man promo that devolved into the brawl, Jungle Boy's the baby face. He attacks MJF from behind with a microphone. Who booked the baby face to attack the guy from behind like a coward with a weapon like a coward? I'm supposed to sympathize for that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I've noticed with Dynamite now, it seems like they've got a shit quota where we're going to give you 2 shits per episode and you use them, where you feel necessary. So it's almost like you expect at some point a couple of guys, like if they had a shit once every 6 months, then yeah, then it's like, oh, this guy means business. But there's like a shit quota. I'm like, okay, well, there's one. There'll be another one at some point. And I also hate it when people end promos with bitch, which Will Hobbs did. At the end of that QTV thing. So I don't know, maybe I'm out of it.
The bitch thing you got to be careful with, because the connotation it can have when you're crossing social lines. And I don't want to sound too liberal, but I would definitely be careful using that language, just because nowadays you never know who's going to get upset. Fair. Right? You never know who's had a bad experience by someone calling them a bitch. And now you got, whole problem you didn't see coming. And I don't think, I use that word in casual conversation, joking around with my friends and stuff. So like you, I don't want to come across as a fuddy-duddy, but when you're drawing in around 900,000 viewers a show and have been, since Punk left, and then, your show hasn't grown. So I think you got to work your hardest to appeal to a larger audience. And when you have maybe parents that have kids that are, the parents are on the fence about letting their kid watch wrestling. If they do catch that bitch, if they do catch that shit, if they do catch that bullshit, if they do catch that asshole, if they do catch that son of a bitch, you never know. You could be turning off part of your audience. And I think it's easier to get heat without that than the risk you take by talking that way.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This is a music podcast as well as a professional wrestling podcast. I have my guests pick songs they enjoyed to feature and discuss. We're going to go to your first track. And we actually talked about Metallica a few moments ago. You picked, I guess it's a new song off an upcoming record. It's called Lux Eterna. Tell me a bit about why you picked this song and tell me about it.
You know what? First of all, I just love Metallica, so I'll just state that. Anybody that knows me knows. Lux Eterna is a song. Lux Eterna is Latin for eternal light. Okay. And so it's a song about how music, if you really listen to the lyrics, it's a song about how music affects us all, draws out emotion, and binds us together. And it really does. Like, if you listen to the lyrics of that song, it that's what it's talking about. It's talking about the positivity that we as a group can feel through sharing a shared experience through music.
Awesome. All right. So this is the first track picked by Dirty Duke Durango. This is Lux Eterna. This is Metallica on the Punk and Pile Drivers podcast. Metallica, Luxy Turtle, the first pick from Dirty Duke Durango on the Punk and Pile Drivers podcast. Now, I'm going to go on to the second thing that I wanted to talk to you about. And this is a conversation that I've had in my back pocket for a while now that I've been wanting to talk to some people about. And you're definitely one of them just because, again, your veteran status. People have said, and this is a quote from Jim Cornette, that professional wrestling, like part of the beauty and the skill of it is to make it look like you're hurting somebody without hurting someone. Okay. And I think that for the most part, we can all kind of agree on that, right?
100%. That's the art of it.
Okay. So a little while ago, I was cruising around Twitter as I do, and I saw a clip highlight video of Stan Hansen, old school, one of the greatest. No one's going to argue that. And it was a clip of him just lariating the shit out of these guys just over and over and over again, as hard as he can, right in the face. And it got me kind of thinking. There's a lot of talk about the, you know, none of the enhancement talent, the jobbers, if you will, wanted to work with the Road Warriors back in the day because they were so stiff and they would just beat the shit out of you. And it got to me thinking about the way the old school guys kind of talk. And I don't know if necessarily sometimes the facts match the narrative. Am I explaining myself properly?
100%. 100%. So the one thing you have to remember is you have to always consider the evolution of wrestling from something that was real, you know, to something that was a really stiff work, to something that became, you know, more flamboyant and more workable. And then, you know, again, wanting to keep the realism, you create, you know, a guy like Stan Hansen. Now, can I ask this one question?
Absolutely.
Were those lariats in Japan?
I don't remember this. Okay. Honestly, this was maybe even like 6 months to a year ago that I saw this clip, and it's just okay. I've had that thought in my. It very well could have been, and I know that all Japan back in those days were known to be, you know, some of the
And that, I mean, that doesn't excuse knocking guys' teeth out or breaking jaws and shit like that. I'm somebody that I pride myself on not necessarily hurting anybody, but I've also, you know, kind of been accused of laying it in, so to speak, or putting the gravy on it. So, you know, but the thing is, I think you can lay it in as long as you can work tomorrow. And I think sometimes, and when I mean work tomorrow, it's not necessarily like right tomorrow. It's, you know, you got to consider your future when you're beating the life out of each other. Mm-hmm. Recently, I think, you know, the recent reemergence in New Japan and North America, you know, quote unquote strong style, I think that really permeated the market, and you know, guys want to work that style, and that's great. But you also have to always remember that if you go to the WWE and you're working 250 dates a year, you can't work strong style. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be very realistic about what your parameters are and how hard you can lay it in. I think with guys like Stan Hansen, you know, Vader, I think
that was
those guys
guy I wanted to bring up too was Vader. Absolutely.
Yeah. He was stiff as shit. Right. And I think with those guys, Vader in particular, and I hate to, you know, speak ill of the guy, but to me, he appeared somewhat of a bully. You know, you don't hear a lot of bad things about him being a mean guy, but he just appeared to me a bully, especially if you had a, you know, a jobber. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, there were times those guys were good for the business too, because sometimes they're weeding out guys that maybe shouldn't be there, right? And, mm-hmm. and I don't mean if you don't want a guy there, you beat the shit out of him until he leaves, but that's kind of what they were doing. And I don't, you know, if you shouldn't be in there, you shouldn't be in there. But at the same time, I think there's a point where you're taking liberty with a guy, and I think safety, you know, I mean, yeah, you want to get over, yeah, you want to look strong, but for me personally, I think there's a, you know, I used to think JBL the same thing. I've never been a huge fan of his because I just thought, you know, he developed a personality later on, but early on, I just thought he was this just stiff as shit, you know? And what the thing I'm watching, noticing now as well, I find a lot of stuff either looks too light or looks stiff as hell. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really sloppy bumps. The bumping is just terrible right now.
Do you think that things have evolved to that over, you know, from maybe the 70s to now?
I don't know. I mean, I think I honestly do believe there's a safe line between, you know, laying it in and making it look good. And then there's just stiff, right? Where you're just, you know, hitting a guy. And like, I always had a philosophy. If you and I are wrestling in a match and you, you know, you potato me one time, you know, it is what it is, right? Like it's, you know, we all throw
you get,
potato.
You get one for free.
Yeah. And, you know, Tiger Kong, God rest his soul, used to use the phrase, sometimes it's good for the business, right? Like it was okay. After the second time, I would actually tell you to be careful. Right? Like, hey, you know, take it easy. If there was a third time, I'd blast you back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because then it's after three times, you're being unsafe with me. Right. And so I think people also don't, they just sometimes take it and say, oh, that guy was real stiff, and don't lay it back in. They don't give that receipt back. And I think, you know, you got to be willing to give the receipt back.
Mm-hmm. The term that, that was used a lot, I don't know if it's so much now, but it used a lot a few years ago when people were talking about it was snug. I work snug. That means I'm not super stiff, but you know, you're going to feel it. And I expect you to kind of work snug back with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that there were some workers, especially through the 80s, like when I come up and, you know, where we trained, we worked really snug. Like there, you know, there was room to escape, but there was not a lot of daylight through that headlock.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where you watch guys working through the 80s and you could have drove buses between the heads and the headlocks at some points.
This is true.
Yeah. And I work guys like that where you literally couldn't feel them on you. So you didn't know what to sell because you didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
So, and I always kind of hated that, you know, I always felt that was a little bit insulting to the fans. So I always worked, you know, like I want to say, I won't mention his name. I worked a guy.
You tell me and, later.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked a guy and he wanted some arm drag spots. And when you're taking an arm drag, you're taking your own bump for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I will lock arms with you and I will put some gravy on it. You know what I mean? I want to look like, you know, and it's not going to look light and shitty when I'm working with you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, at the end of the match, he kind of made a comment like, geez, yeah, you really put some snap on those arm drags. And I don't know if he meant it in a negative way. That's one of the, you know, so, but I just kind of smiled. And I said, yeah, I put some gravy on it. And, you know, and that was the end of the conversation. Like, it, you know, because it wasn't hurting you. Like it just, you're used to, you know, it was just a bit of a faster bump. It was like a snap suplex compared to a suplex.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we all, that's how we were trained. That's how we, you know, there's 20 guys, 25 guys that I came through the dungeon with that all did arm drags the same way.
You mentioned the term strong style a few minutes ago. And I think that that's just kind of like a buzzword now that people use just to try to kind of sound cool and look cool. I don't know if strong style really exists anymore.
Well, and I'm in Japan, it does for sure. But here's the difference between strong style and North American style. And I'm going to screw up these stats, but it was, you know, it was TJ that told me. He's an encyclopedia wrestling. So if he hears this and hears I get this wrong, please TJ, correct me.
TJ don't got time to listen to my podcast.
He does. I'll send it to him. but excuse me. I'm getting over a cold.
Even the cold, you got to go over on the cold too, hey?
Bro, I haven't been sick for 3 years. The cold had a hot comeback, man.
There you go.
But he told me, we were talking about, you know, the best in the world, and this was just last November. And they were talking about who the best from Japan was. Like 17 matches last year, right? And he's like, yes, yeah, Seth Rollins wrestled like 200 matches last year. So how do you say that guy's better? That wrestled 17 times.
Yeah.
When Seth Rollins competes at the level he competes at 200 nights a year. And I don't disagree with that. You know what I mean? So strong style, you can only work strong style because you're working 17 nights a year, right? Like when I get really, one of the things that really bugs me, it's, and this is generally all Japanese wrestling through almost all the generations. Why do they work so hard to drop each other on their heads? Like when they're doing German suplexes and stuff. It's literally like, if you don't have your chin tucked, you're going to have a concussion every single night.
Yeah, that's very pervasive on the independent scene right now as well. There's a lot of,
I don't dig that.
And some of it is, you know, purposeful. And some of it, again, like you were saying, it's just bad bumps. Like I've seen a lot of matches where, you know, someone will go up and just the balance will be off or something will be off and they're committed. So they're just going to go with it and do the best. And I've seen guys just drop somebody on their head because they just couldn't get it over.
And yeah, well, the truth is, I dropped Pete Wilson on his head once. You know, Pete isn't the heaviest guy. So, of course, if you're putting a little gravy on a suplex. Mm-hmm. And just before I took him up for a German suplex, he put his arm around my neck like it was going to be a back suplex.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I didn't pause. It didn't even kind of, I didn't think about it until, you know, kind of, well, he said something. And I was like, oh, it's because his arm was behind my head. I didn't blame mm-hmm. him. Like, I should have adjusted. But, yeah, I dropped him on his head. He had a concussion. Mm. You know? Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm not cool with that.
All right, we're going to go to your second song before I bring topic number three, which is actually something that I believe you've mentioned on social media recently. But the song you picked is The Dirtiest Drunk in the History of Liquor by a band called The Stanfields. Was this like a St. Patrick's Day pick? Because this should be going up on tomorrow, which is Friday, which I believe is St. Patrick's Day.
You know what? I certainly didn't think of that when I picked it. But no, man, I was out in Nova Scotia last summer for a couple of weeks, and I was at a 3-day little music festival in this really small town, and the Stanfields played there, and this was one of their songs. And I downloaded a little bit more of their music, and it's just, I mean, this song is like, if you don't smile listening to this, if you listen to the lyrics of this song, it's hilarious. And if it doesn't make you smile and tap your foot, I don't know if anything will.
All right. So this is The Dirtiest Drunk in the History of Liquor. The band is the Stanfields on the Punk and Pod Rivers podcast.
I knew a fella back in 1998. Wasn't real bright, but he had a lot of nerve. Drank like a fish, and he had a special place in the bottom of the learning curve. He had 10 bells when he left his parents' house, frothing at the mouth, shooting from the hip. He'd give her for a week and recover for a day, kind of change with a busted lip. From the dirtiest drunk, dirtiest drunk, dirtiest drunk in the history of liquor. Dirtiest drunk, dirtiest drunk, dirtiest drunk in the history of liquor. He had enough left to buy some cream to settle all the itching when the sun don't shine. Looked like a 50-pound sack of potatoes, all hung over in the food bank line. The dirtiest drunk, the dirtiest drunk, the dirtiest drunk in the history of liquor. The dirtiest drunk, the dirtiest drunk, the dirtiest drunk in the history of liquor.
Is the Stanfields, pick number two from Dirty Duke Durango. The track was called, what was it, The Dirtiest Drunk in the History of Liquor. That's a fun tune.
That is the good stuff, man.
The third thing that I want to talk to you about today is something that I think is really, really odd, and you actually mentioned it on social media. How the hell can you regulate betting on professional wrestling?
Whoa.
I find this whole thing very, very odd.
Well, the first thing I want to start with, and I say this with some, I know I should never judge, and I really try not to, but I'm judging a little on this, like, forgive the language even, but what kind of fucking degenerate is betting on fixed sports? Let's start there. Okay. Let's
fair.
Let's have a conversation with that.
Okay.
So now you may, and the people listening may give people involved in business and sport the benefit of the doubt. I, however, am a little bit jaded. So my current thought process on betting of all levels, and I think you and I have exchanged a couple of comments on this on social media, is I think that betting, first and foremost, has become way too pervasive in all sports.
I was going to say that it has overtaken everything to the point where, like, we're getting interrupted by Cabby in the middle of a Flames game telling me that, oh, the line has now changed to this and this and this. It's so pervasive and so distracting, and it's taking like sports, which again is something kind of like wrestling. It's an emotional investment in your team, and it's dwindling it down to dollars and cents again. And I don't like the way sports is heading.
Well, what it does for me, especially, I mean, okay, so let's say, you know, there's a booking committee, right? Mm-hmm. And angles and programs leak out in the media constantly. We hear it all the time. It's unreal how many leaks there are in these locker rooms. So all of a sudden you've got a betting line being set. Now, let's assume that nobody's going to tell their friend who's going to tell their friend who's going to tell their friend to lay big money on Roman Reigns tonight. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, we know sometimes, you know, weeks, months in advance, who's going over at a pay-per-view. Do you know what I mean? So how do you expect this stuff not to leak out? How do you expect this stuff? Or if I'm getting in with the betting houses, I'm watching the match. Okay, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. The betting line, geez, Roman Reigns. People are betting Roman heavy. I'm going to put Brock over, and the betting house is going to make a fortune, and we're going to make a ton back in advertising.
And I wonder if it's not as cut and dried as who's going to win, if it's length of match, or will this move be used, or whatever. Kind of like those prop bets on the Super Bowl, because I can't imagine just as cut and dried as who wins.
But those are the same assholes that are betting on like two cockroaches racing up a wall. You know what I mean? Like,
I never won.
Give your heads a shake. Like, just give your heads a shake. You can't. I mean, okay, so what's next? So we put pro, and man, I love pro wrestling. You know that. So I'm not knocking pro wrestling as a thing. But so pro wrestling's now gone into the betting houses. Okay, what's next? Pro wrestling at the Olympics? Is it going to be a judge sport? How's that going to work? Do you know what I mean? Like, I appreciate we want pro wrestling to be quote unquote legitimized, but you can't bet on fixed sports. Jesus.
Yeah. And like AEW has been doing it for quite a while. I don't know. Actually, DraftKings, I think it is a sponsor of AEW. I don't know exactly how their betting works, but I know that WWE, they're talking to a couple of states about legalizing it somehow. And yeah, I just find it very, very odd. And it's unsettling.
Well, to guys like you and I that don't gamble anyway, it's probably a different thing. But like, say, like when they're flashing up all those odds and stuff, I literally have no idea what that shit means.
Oh,
so when
they
put it up, it's such an irritant to me.
I don't know what a -175 means in a Flames game. Like, they ain't scoring 175 goals this fucking season, never mind one game.
That's the thing. You see a guy -175, the other guy's +150, and -175 is the favorite. What? I thought positive.
Like an over under, I get, you know. And like that's easy, but yeah, it seems odd.
Yeah, you say parlay to me, I don't know what that is.
That sounds like something you say in fencing before, you know.
It's pirate talk, right? If you want to parlay before they kill you, you say parlay, and they have to have a conversation before they kill you.
Is that true? Did you make that shit up?
No, I'm pretty sure that's the deal. I learned it on, what's his name? Johnny Depp there.
Oh, Pirates of the Caribbean, they were parlaying?
Yeah, watch. I think it's in the first one. Yeah, he says calls for parlay.
No, I've never seen a Pirates of the Caribbean movie in my life.
I hope I'm not lying, or I'm going to look real dumb.
I could edit that part out after.
No,
I'm just
kidding. Don't. It'll be hilarious.
No, I don't think I've ever edited anything actually in the podcast.
Who's got time for that?
Yeah. Speaking of podcasts, you have something cooking, a new one. What's the deal with your old show? The Duke, what was it called again? Duke, you suck. Is that on the shelf?
Yeah, it's on the shelf for now. Here's the thing, man. It was getting really hard for me. I was getting really busy at work and things like that. So it was getting really hard for me to book guests. And then working with schedules, working with my own schedule, it literally became like a hassle to be doing. So something you're doing for a hobby and doing for fun, all of a sudden you're like, oh, God damn it. You know, I can't get this. It just becomes like, you know what? This is becoming, you know, an irritant. I'm just going to shut her down for now. And, you know, it's hard to get people to commit. They got lives. So stuff comes up. All of a sudden the guest cancels, and that's fine. Again, stuff comes. But now you've got no show for a week, right? Yeah. And so for me, somebody that kind of likes to be consistent, to have those kinds of issues is I'd rather not do it than look like I can't get it done on time.
Yeah, for sure. But you've got a new thing cooking with Robert Ward. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, man, we've got, you know, it took us a longer time to come up with a name than the concept, but the Two Guys with Too Many Opinions podcast. You know, it's basically just Rob and I sitting around pontificating about current events, you know, be it sports, politics, you know, civic issues. thing is, Rob and I, we're both somewhat conservative, but I would consider myself much more socially liberal than him. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a derogatory fashion. He's a conservative. He is, but I'm a little, you know, I'm just that much more. So I think that we definitely don't always share the same opinion. It's not a show with two guys, you know, just in an echo chamber. But I think the cool thing is every week we run it live. So it's on Sunday nights at 7 PM.
Oh, okay.
And we want people to tune in live. You know, as much as I love my own voice and love my own opinion, I'm really open to hearing yours too. So if we're talking about something you don't agree with us, and we will address it, and it's not an argumentative, it's not a I have to win fashion. It's present me with your information because I'm willing to change my mind if you have the information that'll change my mind. Right. And not because I'm locked in, I'm open to listening to what other people have to say. And I think that's something that's been lost in today's landscape of, you know, be it podcasting or even just general conversation, is nobody's willing to allow somebody to give them information. We're also entrenched in we're married to our ideas. And it's kind of like, you know, we all have to admit at some point in our lives, we've been wrong about stuff. You know, we've been wrong about how we felt about people. We've been wrong about, you know, how we're perceived a situation to have happened. So if you go into every conversation with an open mind, hopefully you hear something new and intriguing that maybe helps you grow. Or, you know, again, if there's new information, it helps you change your mind and change your philosophy.
Yeah, civil like discussion and discourse, I think, is very much at a premium these days. And it's very much kind of a lost art because, like you said, everyone is so firmly entrenched despite information. And I think it's getting worse and worse as time is going by.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Rob and I are both, when I say kind of he's a little more right, I'm a little more left. We're both definitely closer to the center than left or right, you know, to be totally fair. But at the same time, I think that's who we're trying to find those centrists, because all we hear right now, and I think everyone would agree, all we really hear is from the 10% on the extreme left or the 10% on the extreme right.
I think those that's of us accurate.
Those of us that float closer to the middle, we're kind of too casual. We're not the ones going to be out there throwing protests. We're like, geez, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but just settle down. You know what I mean?
And I think a lot of that stuff, those kind of outlandish opinions on the left and the right, those are what makes the best clickbait headlines. So that's what gets, you know, on the Twitter, because it gets the biggest reaction, when it's not by any stretch of the means the majority thinking.
Well, and then what happens is people start clicking because they do see that negative clickbait. And then you click it once, you click it twice. Now it's in your algorithm. So now that's all you're feeding yourself, right? Is that sort of those negative reactions. And humans are trained emotional response. You can only resist that kind of mentality for so long if you inundate yourself with it day after day after day after day.
Absolutely. All right. One more thing I wanted to ask you, the Metallica, are you going to the shows that are coming up here in Edmonton? Is that this summer or next summer?
2024. And yes, I am going to that show as well.
Both of them or just the one?
Both of them. Oh, both.
Because apparently it's like a back to back, but no repeats kind of night, which I think is kind of cool with a band like that has such a big back catalog that they can do that.
Well, and that's a conversation I was having with a couple of people. And I said, you know, when you've got a band with a catalog as big as Metallica, everyone's going to leave that show not hearing a song they really wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Right. And they're too old. I mean, I seen Metallica play a 3-hour show when they were doing that Enter Sandman tour. They can't, they're 60. They can't do that shit anymore.
Yeah. Right? All right. So, is there anything,
I'm looking forward to it.
Anything else that you want to add before we put a button on this?
Yeah, man. Give my man Boris some sponsorship. This is a great program. I think he's doing a really good thing. I love the mixture of, you know, wrestling and sports in general, and putting the music in there, because you get to know people by the stuff they listen to. I think that's a really cool thing you got going. So support this. You know, if you're already listening, cool. If you know somebody, get the word of mouth out there. Get people listening to the Punks and Pile Drivers podcast.
What a guy. Where can we find you on the old social medias?
You can find me on the Twitter machine at Duke Durango, and same as on Instagram at Duke Durango. You can find us on Facebook on Two Guys with Too Many Opinions podcast, as well as on Instagram. I don't think we have Twitter because it's kind of a cesspool anyways. So, give us a follow. Give us a watch. You know, and definitely share your opinion with us.
You have an Instagram? Do you really?
This it's mostly cat mind. Pictures.
I was just gonna say, is it pictures of cats and grilled cheese sandwiches or what?
Yeah, pretty much.
Man. Maybe some tomato soup or something.
Yeah, Cat's the odd promo. Not what's better than grilled cheese and tomato soup? You can't make fun of that.
That's true. All right, Duke. It is always a pleasure when our paths cross. Thank you so much for taking some time to hang out with me.
Man, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I hope you're doing well and continued success with the show.
All right. We are going to go out to brand new music from a band called The Speakeasy. The track is called Bright Side. If everything goes according to plan, and I don't like to talk about things before they happen, but if everything goes according to plan, there will not only be one episode of the Punk and Plotters podcast this week, there will actually be two. Tomorrow night, I am set to sit down and talk with music producer / video game developer / professional wrestling commentator Kevin Gill. And nice. I'm really excited about that. So I'm hoping if everything goes according to plan, that will be done tomorrow and hopefully available for you to listen to on Saturday. So two for the price of one.
Twice as nice, baby.
There you go. Thank you guys, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you all very soon. Speak of the pieces that fell to the floor.